All right, you ready to do this?
Are you recording right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was getting a little crosstalk just in case. You never know.
All right. One of these days, I'm going to leave it in.
Just to have it there? It's too bad that one that had the most amazing clothes ever, we screwed up on the first edit because that was so awesome. That was good. All right. Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 12. My name is John Morgan, and joining me tonight is Cold Coffee. And we are in our, is it our adopted hometown, or did you say it's where you live?
I guess, yeah, it's where we live now. I think it's reached a point. It took a couple years, but yeah, you're right. It is, of course, our adopted hometown, but yeah, it's home now.
It's the birthplace of the MMA Roadshow.
It is the birthplace of the MMA Roadshow.
Las Vegas, Nevada. So that's what we're doing tonight. We have wrapped up a pretty epic six-week run on the road. Normally, I used to feel kind of guilty as we were starting this podcast out when we weren't on the road. I felt kind of bad because I'm like, hey, we're calling it the road show. But I'm not going to lie. After six straight weeks, Australia, the Philippines, Brazil, New Orleans, Mexico, I'm ready to be home for a little bit.
Dude, you deserve some home time. I know you got the young boy and you got the wife there. You know, I mean, it's you deserve it. You earned it.
I appreciate it. So, as you know, longtime listeners of the MMA Roadshow, when we are not on the road, we're setting up at Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs and Durango because that's home base, really, for the Morgan family, and that's where the MMA Roadshow takes place. But we've done something a little different. Normally, we sneak out on the patio and grab ourselves a little fresh air, but summer is in full effect already in Las Vegas. It's 100 damn degrees outside. The sun is down. And it's still 100 damn degrees.
We're in a heat advisory. One of those things. That I don't know if you saw it, that it came out, the weather advisory, from like, it was like from a day or two ago until like this weekend. It's like, don't go outside. You know, like, don't do shit outside because it's fucking hot.
The high is like 111, man. It's crazy.
Unreal.
So we decided, you know what we'll do is we'll just belly up to the bar up here and just throw on the headsets.
Yeah, we got Danny taking care of us here, you know.
Danny's taking care of us. You can't beat that. And you know, we're going to get a strange look or two from people saying, why do these guys have headsets?
After New Orleans, who cares at this point?
Yeah. After New Orleans, as people were literally standing in our face asking us what the hell we were doing while we were trying to record.
Maybe they thought it was performance art. You know, they thought, like, is this late night, you know, New Orleans art? And I didn't really think of it at the time, but maybe that's what it was.
It was like 5 o'clock in the morning.
It was pretty late.
You know, I guess we never really told the story of you almost getting in a fight. After the last segment.
I don't know if we should tell, but yes. After the last segment, there was
some drama. Let's just say that a gentleman.
A local gentleman. New Orleans. He was very proud about how he was a local and we were tourists.
He made sure and pointed that out. So this was after the final segment in New Orleans. We were done. We had just finished up at John Lafitte's blacksmith shop. We were done. We were done, and we were just standing there having a quick beer, about ready to head back to the hotel so we could get the edit done. The edit that didn't go so well originally because it was 6 o'clock in the morning and we were hammered trying to get.
How many times
done.
Did you wake me up when I fell asleep editing that?
Oh, that was funny, dude. You were literally falling asleep at the computer as you were editing. It was hilarious. But basically, this gentleman bumped into us on the sidewalk, basically went out of his way to shoulder as many of our group as possible as he walked by, and Angry Kenny just erupted and was, like, ready to throw down. And this dude took out a dog, leash?
Yeah, it was all of a sudden it, like, came out of nowhere. Like, it was like his X-Men hidden power. It came out of nowhere, and it was like a 8-foot. Looked like 8-foot, 10-foot leash with, like, the whole metal thing, and I thought he was going to try to start swinging at us
or
whatever.
He started swinging it around like it was some kind of, like, Mortal Kombat weapon or something. I don't know. And Kenny was just down to fight at that point. I think he was just did not care one bit at all. And I was like, dude, stop. Like, what if that – I mean, okay, I was drunk too, but I'm like, what if that thing, like, hits you in the eye or something?
Eye, right?
You know, like, dude, you know, all of a sudden you're blind in one eye. You got to wear an eye patch for the rest of your life just because.
Might be prettier. I might be prettier. But no, cooler heads prevailed, and luckily you guys were there and cooled it down. And, you know, I don't know. It's not that I ever condone drunken fighting or whatever, but it was a little strange. The guy busts through our group purposely to check everybody. He's like, hey, I'm a local. That's how we do. I'm like, you don't do that. You're just
being
a dick.
Yeah, it was pretty rude.
That's not
being pretty
local. That's just being a dick, you know. And
it was pretty rude. But luckily, like I said, cooler heads prevailed. We got out of it. We went home. And
unnamed UFC executive, you know, or whatever you were calling him that night. I forget what you had your name
oh,
for.
Oh, prominent UFC official. Prominent UFC official.
Yes, not executive. I wouldn't say an executive was out hanging out with us or whatever. But
that was an interesting night. So that was 2 weeks ago, and then last week was Mexico. You didn't make the trip down there. Justin Park actually made the trip with me down there. So we're both at home this week. We'll talk about Mexico City in just a little bit. Just kind of give everybody an update. I'm at home this week. Like you said, I'm getting some family time. You were going to be at home this week, and then we made a call last second, basically. It was last night. We're taping this on Thursday. I think you and I were talking on Wednesday night. You're actually in about, 10 hours from now. So by the time this podcast is online, you'll be in the air heading to St. Louis because there's some big announcements going down in St. Louis. In addition to Bellator 138, Steven Morocco's out there. There's some big announcements about their future. We've seen a couple different reports today. Liam McGeary versus Tito Ortiz for a light heavyweight belt might be one of those announcements, according to a couple of reports I've seen. There was also another report out there that there's a potential for them to announce details of a combination kickboxing / MMA event partnering with Glory. That's out there. I've heard rumors, and I'll just say that, rumors. I don't have anything confirmed that maybe they're going to announce details of a tournament. So a lot of stuff going on in addition to Bellator 138. So truth be told, you got a pretty long day tomorrow. You're going to fly to St. Louis. There's going to be and I say tomorrow, we're taping this on Thursday night. It'll be today when it comes out, which is Friday. But
sure,
you'll be on a plane to St. Louis, connecting through Dallas, I believe, or connecting.
I think it is Dallas, yeah.
Connecting somewhere. I put you on American Airlines, which made you grumpy because you might have some middle seats. But you're going to do that. And then,
I am a Delta boy, but yes.
And then you're going to do this big announcement that's going to take place at the arena. And then, of course, you're going to have the whole fight night as well. So your first Bellator event, yeah?
Yeah, and I'm kind of excited for that. You know, and one of the things, you know, like, we do this because we love what we're doing, you know. Like, you know, now that you actually put the number of the hours, kind of really slaps it in the face, you know, because it's like, oh, well, it's actually 9 hours from now I'll be boarding the plane, you know, and that's after the edit and it's after the whatever. But, yeah, I'm excited to go down there. I'm excited to see what the news is that they're gonna drop on us. And, yeah, I'm excited to see a Bellator fight. I mean, living in the UFC world and all that kind of stuff, it's great to see how they do stuff. And then, you know, I've been lucky enough to see, you know, how Invicta did one of their fights and then actually get to go down there and now see how Bellator does. Yeah, I'm kind of excited to see. You know, I think it puts it all in perspective. You know, you see the different organizations.
It is interesting to see what they do right, what they do wrong, who does something better than others.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great, and I'm excited to go down there, and hopefully it's going to be some big news.
Yeah. Let's talk about Mexico last week. I know you didn't go, but you did you go to the first Mexico City event?
No, but I'm very jealous of this taco place I keep hearing about.
Aww.
You know, even the UFC staff, you know, all their Instagram pictures, everybody was at this place. So apparently this place is top-notch, and I need to make my way down there eventually. If Justin Park ever lets me get one of the Mexico City trips.
We did damage. I should say I actually took a picture of my receipt from Friday night after the weigh-ins. We went to the taco shop one last time. So the podcast had already been produced. We went to the taco shop because they had really good internet. Like, we could actually upload stuff from there. We had videos to upload. The taco shop actually had better internet than our hotel, better Wi-Fi.
That's ridiculous.
And they had tacos. So it was myself, Justin Park, and Danny Austin, who's a reporter from Canada, who kind of tagged along with this as well. So we basically just started putting in work, and when we got the bill, there was three of us. I had to take a picture of the bill because we had 34 beers and 28 margaritas between the three of us.
Wow.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of that. So, yeah, we'll have to bring you back down.
I'm not going
to
lie. You know, it sounded a little bit like that. That sounded all right.
Yeah, it was not too bad. So the Mexico City event, you know, we always like to just revisit quickly what we did the past week because we do tape on Thursday nights. Not a huge post-fight experience to talk about because, honestly, worked from the arena as long as we could and then went straight to the airport. I had a 6 o'clock flight home, and I was ready to get home. So, you know, that, again, that was 6 straight weeks on the road. I should say it's 5 of 6. One was here in Vegas, but it was UFC 187. So it was 6 straight event weeks, 5 on the road. You know, multiple continents. I was ready to get home, so I went straight to the airport afterwards. So no real big post-fight stories. But, you know, one thing I really did take out of it was was Kelvin Gastelum. You know, Kelvin. Yeah. Kelvin is funny. He's a great guy. Met him during his run on The Ultimate Fighter. That was actually back when the UFC used to do media days, and they would bring in the any media that wanted to talk to the cast members on the first day. And they don't really do that much anymore, and I kind of wish they did because, I don't know, it made me enjoy the seasons a little bit more. When I got to go in and talk to everybody and kind of get to know them a little bit, then I really enjoyed the season watching a little bit more. But Kelvin, I'll never forget because meeting him, I'm just like, yeah, this guy is nice and has absolutely no chance in hell of winning this show. You know, he's going to be the first one out. And then sure enough, he goes all the way through. He beats Uriah Hall and wins the season, which was just amazing. But, you know, back in Mexico City, incredible win over Nate Marquardt. I mean, just absolutely beat up Nate Marquardt. No other way to say it. I mean, that was a one-sided beatdown to the point that I thought, ugh, that might be the last we've ever seen in Nate Marquardt.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I really like Nate, but, you know, at a point when you see where halfway through, it was just like you could tell he was done.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, please, somebody stop it. Because he hasn't done it yet, you know, and either his corner's going to do it, but he's such a hard fighter. You know he was going to get to the end. You know he was going to get to the end of the round. Now it's a little fuzzy. Did he, once he finally got there, he was just like, I don't have anything else.
Yeah,
right?
He said, I'm done. And Trevor Whitman was like, yeah, you're done. You're done.
And that's tough to see because you know, you feel for the guy. I know he's got family to take care of or whatever,
yeah,
but nobody would want him to go back in and take more of that because it was so one-sided.
Absolutely not.
And Kelvin looked
so
incredible.
High praise for Kelvin Gastelum. But, of course, we know Kelvin Gastelum was fighting up a weight class, wants to go back down to welterweight, but then at the post-fight press conference, Dana White just basically pooped all over him. It was like, you are not going back to 170. And I get it. You know, he missed weight, and he missed weight badly, and he does struggle with his weight cut. But for Dana to just go out of his way and just say, listen, man, there's no way you're going back to 170, I was a little bit surprised. And after the press conference ended, The way the room is set up, it's kind of weird, this little tiny room they use in Mexico City for the press conference, because there's only one way in and one way out. Normally, you know, at the press conferences, they take the fighters to a back room, they funnel them in to the dais, and then they funnel them out of the room. Well, in Mexico City, the way it's set up, there is no back access, so they have to walk alongside all the media. So after they're done, they have to walk by everybody. And I was standing there, and I told Kelvin, I was like, hey, man, first of all, I was like, hey, congratulations, big win for you. Again, you know, I've see the guy a lot, met a lot of his fights. Congratulations. And then, you know, I did say to Kelvin, I'm like, man, that was kind of messed up what Dana said, you know, just to kind of get his reaction a little bit. And I'll say this, man, much respect to Kelvin. Even knowing I didn't have a recorder in my hand or whatever, man, he was like, nah, I'm not even worried about it, man. I'm just gonna prove to Dana that I can make it. And I thought that was real cool, man. Very, very professional attitude. You know, he certainly is. Probably came in dressed like a pro, man. He had a nice suit on, looking good, and carrying himself in a respectful way. But I thought that was cool because I thought it would have been really easy for him to be pissed off. And I do think that he could have done himself a favor. And I talked about it on MMA Junkie Radio this morning too. But I do think he could have done himself a favor. Like maybe he'd have come in at 180 or even like 182 or 183, just something, just to show, hey, man, I'm making progress. I'm not right at 185. So I think he could have done himself a little favor, but I was surprised that Dana basically just shut him down because after an impressive performance like that, I think he understands he was paying a penalty by having to move up in weight. Why not let the guy go back to where he wants to go?
Yeah. I mean, and I agree. You know, it's tough to see Dana jump on somebody like that, you know, but in the same sense, it's almost like Dana probably wanted to say, I told you so. This was the weight that you should have been on, and look how you're performing at the same.
Good point.
Because, you know, Nate's not just a small guy that doesn't go in there and try to knock your head off either. I mean, he's a very, very tough guy. And for Kelvin to do what he did, I mean, it looked like they were on two different leagues.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, I don't know if it was the altitude that got to him or whatever, but it looked like a different Nate Marquardt than one I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
But for Dana to go like that, you know, instead of sort of congratulate him and go that particular route, you know, but again, you know, I mean, there was a couple times where I think Dana got a little upset with him or whatever, and, you know, it's going to show. But still, it's a little distressing that, you know, on one of a fighter's big night that Dana didn't take more of a, you know, hey, yeah, you did good, and we'll talk about it. Instead, he just shut it down.
Shut it down right there. So, you mentioned the altitude. Tisha Torres, Henry Cejudo, both of them in the post-fight press conference. admitted it. And Henry Cejudo, I think he mentioned more of the fish taco that he had earlier in the week that got him sick. But both admitted that the altitude was a problem. And I think this is a big lesson for anybody that's going to be fighting in Mexico City in the future is that, like, listen, you're going to have to do something to get used to it. I know the first time I went to Mexico City, of course, I was 19 at the time, but I know the first time I went there, I didn't realize it was at such altitude. I mean, I don't know why. I just thought I guess growing up in Texas, I think of, like, the flat plains, and then there's Mexico right below you in Texas. It must just be a bunch of flat plains, too. Like, no,
yeah,
this is
right.
This is up in the mountains a little bit, and I think it's a big lesson for everybody moving forward. The last thing I want to say about Mexico was Cain Velasquez. Cain also very professional. Came in. He was asked about the altitude and didn't want to make any excuses. And it was funny because his answers were very short, very direct, and that's kind of what you expect from Cain anyway. But I thought it was kind of cool, too, that you could take it as, man, this guy doesn't even want to be here. He doesn't want to talk because they were very short answers. But I just thought it was that he didn't want to take away anything from Fabricio Werdum. He got beat, yeah. and he wanted to be a pro about it, and he wanted to just, you know, give all the credit where it was due and admit that he failed and not put any blame or anything else, just admit that he failed. So I know you weren't there, but, you know, as a former UFC employee, I know you had behind-the-scenes access and that sort of thing. And then Cain was out for a long time, too, so you didn't see a lot of him. But, I mean, I guess, you know, what was your impression of his attitude that night and maybe any impressions you've had of Cain over your time seeing him behind the scenes?
Again, I agree with you. I think Cain's the consummate gentleman. He's always done whatever was asked from him. You know, nobody could ever say anything about his work ethic, you know. And then, again, yeah, you're talking about he had some time off. Then you start bringing in not necessarily the ring rust, but also just fighting, coming from an injury, coming from time off, going in there, and then going into not even like a – everybody knows if you put Cain, you know, where he fights. If he's fighting in California, he's fighting in Vegas, whatever, you're going to get the Cain that you're used to. But I think the Cain that's been away for a while, and then let alone ratcheting it up times 10, the difficulty level of, one, playing fighting the guy that Fabricio looked so phenomenal – it was unreal. That one, I think that was is probably his best performance I think I've ever seen.
Agreed.
And he's had some great performances. So let alone going on against a guy that's, you know, coming in with his absolute best game, but in a place where Cain looked slow in that first round, by the end of the first round. And I'd never seen that before. And so then I started questioning myself, is he really fully healed? You know, is it? Then I started thinking it's got to be the altitude. It's got to be something, you know. But for him to not take anything away and not blame that is perfectly Cain to a T.
Yeah.
Like, I would never think I would ever see Cain in there go and start making excuses. That's not Cain.
Yeah.
Cain's going to own up, and he's going to say Fabricio was the better man on the night, and he's just going to go back and work harder. I mean, I'm not sure if he's going to start trying to work altitude training because now he's finally found a weakness, that something that's put a chink in his armor. Because I've never seen one in Cain before.
Yeah.
He's always got the greatest cardio than anything you're ever going to see. Now I can almost just see him going back and training even harder that his next fight, I'm scared for whoever's going to be his next opponent. Because I think Cain's going to want to go back because he's going to be upset about this last performance. And he's going to want to erase any doubt that he's still the top or the number two heavyweight now. And
I agree.
That goes in the whole thing. Because now everybody's talking about, is Fabricio the greatest forever? That performance he put on was probably one of the greatest performances of a heavyweight I've seen.
I completely agree. He's definitely in the discussion. Well, we came back, or I should say I came back home. You were already here. I took a couple days off. I was exhausted, to be honest with you. And, man, I had bills to pay. I mean, I just had stuff
shit
that had
to
be done. Yeah, just real-world stuff to be done. So in my absence, conducted your own interview, man. Look at you. Look at the videographer.
Someone's
got to
pay the bills, right?
So as we are sitting here, and I should say you keeping it real with the 24-ounce can of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Red, white, and blue, baby. Look at that. This won an award like in the –
what, like 1890 or something?
1893.
Listen, I'm not doing much better over here. I'm just having a big Coors Light.
Yeah. Coors?
Big Coors Light. is all I'm doing.
There's your Dallas coming out. There's your Texas.
Yeah, I'm just having a big draft Coors Light over here, so I'm not going to act like I'm doing much better. And I've been known to slam a few PBRs or two. But as we get these and we get a second round, we're gonna play this Brian Caraway interview that you did.
Yeah.
Brian Caraway, let me just say, and I'll let you kind of set up the piece a little bit, but let me just say that Brian Caraway, a guy that gets hated on a lot, I think probably a lot of it is just jealousy because he's with Misha Tate. So I think people are just kind of want to hate on him just because. And, you know, he said some things along the way that I think have rubbed people the wrong way. Truth be told, he's always struck me as an honest guy, a very sincere guy. He's been around the world a lot, too. The MMA Roadshow and Brian Caraway have crossed paths once or twice along the way because, you know, he and Misha have been doing a lot of guest fighter appearances.
Yeah.
And now they've got fights booked. Obviously, they're fighting in July, so they're not doing that as much. But you got a chance to talk to Brian, so, you know, just kind of set it up. What did you guys talk about, and is there anything in particular thing people should be listening for?
Well, it was mainly when it first came in, you know, granted, he was on the MMA Junkie radio show, so if anybody wants to go back and catch the archive of that, he co-hosted the show of that, and I thought he did an incredible job. Then it was a little tough because, you know, I know that Goes and George are throwing everything at him. They had him for 2 hours. I'm like, gosh, I don't want to just repeat anything. But there were a couple of things that I picked up on that I want to kind of talk a little bit about. And mainly it was about his lack of using social media. He just never really was big, you know. There was a point where he had the beef with Ronda and the whatnot, and that caused a lot of strife. But, you know, Misha's been really working with him to try to get back out there because especially, you know, in this day and age, fighters are using that to pretty much matchmake for themselves. So I talked with him a little bit about that. You know, we talked a little bit about Misha because they are fighting on the card together coming up. And then we just, you know, kind of got his thoughts about his upcoming fight against Wineland. You know, we talked a little about his past fight, and we just kind of left it at that. But it was great, you know, listening to where he was in the radio show, and I thought the interview went great. But, you know, I'm no John Morgan. you know, there's probably times I'm better behind the camera. But, you know, it came out good. I think it was a good interview, and I thought Brian was in good sports. And I found out after the fact, after the thing done, that he loves barbecues. So I'm hoping that eventually we'll get him over and have some barbecue, do a little pool time, and maybe actually get him on the podcast. I know we've been trying
to
get him
on
out
this
here.
Week. We were texting him, and that's, you know, why we're using this audio. But
yeah, so Brian, if you're listening, so now I had to go to an interview because you didn't come on the podcast. So
I'm glad before we set this up, you brought up one pet peeve I have, and I'm losing it since I live out here kind of out west now in Vegas. But to me, a barbecue is barbecue. Like, I'm from Texas. If you're barbecuing,
you're going to bring up whether you're barbecuing or whether I'm grilling?
You're grilling out. You know what I mean? Like, you're grilling out. I'm not going to lie, though. I'm starting to lose that a little bit.
That's being a barbecue elitist, but you are totally correct. You're totally correct, and I feel the same way. Grilling is more closer with the direct heat, where barbecue is a lot of time is the indirect heat.
But people say you want to come over and have a barbecue, and it's like,
but yeah,
nah,
nobody
dog,
says, hey, you want to come over and grill? It's like, no. They're like, what's that?
See, I grew in Dallas, or at least I don't know if it's still that way, but for me it was always, you want to come over and grill out.
Yeah, we'll really?
Grill out, you know?
I guess we did say that too, but now it's like, you know, you come over and get grilled. That's somebody just getting in your face about shit. Or you come over and barbecue, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to eat
so
tasty,
what, are we
going to
slow roast
treats?
A brisket for 18 hours? I don't get that kind of time, Kenny.
We don't get that time.
All right, well, we are going to get another round of Frosty Beverages here. And as we do that, sit back and listen to Cold Coffee's interviewing. It's not the first time you've interviewed anybody because you do it on camera sometime. But the first time for the MMA Roadshow. So let's sit back and listen to Cold Coffee and Brian Caraway.
First, Brian, how you feeling? And how are you doing? And what do you think about this Vegas heat we got going on?
Yeah, man, I'm doing good. You know, hard in training camp right now, trying to get skinny. And, man, it's been hotter than the Dickens lately. But, you know, it's good for cutting weight, man. You just throw on some clothes, run outside, and you'll drop about 5 pounds in 5 minutes. So, you know, from a fighter's perspective, that's always good.
What has been the biggest sort of change since you've kind of came to Vegas? I mean, is it the heat? I mean, what really excited you about coming out here, made the decision that I wanted to come out here?
You know, you know, first it wasn't my idea. It was actually Misha's. I didn't want to come out here at all. You know, I miss the Northwest. I'm a country boy. And I love the mountains and the lakes. And, you know, she said, you know, give it a chance. And what made me decide to come out here was actually Coach Robert Falls. You know, I've known him for a long time. He used to coach up at Team Quest in Portland and, you know, at my neck of the woods. And I know he's a phenomenal mental coach. And I feel like that's what I need the next level. I don't, you know, so much need more coaching. I've been around for 12 years as far as a skill set. But I need someone to sharpen the skills I have already. And someone to really get me dialed in mentally. And that was Coach Fallis. UFC's based out of here. LA's close by. So I said, you know, I'll jump down there and try it out. And now that we've been here, I found, you know, the Red Rocks and a bunch of cool hiking places. And, you know, I learned to love Vegas. But the challenge definitely was obviously the strip, having friends coming to town every single weekend. Like, hey, man, what's going on? Where's the hookup? Where's the pool party? And at first it was cool. Like, dude, we're going to be super cool. We're going to be the coolest friends. We're going to show them all a good time. Then I'm like, dude, I don't even drink that much. My liver can't handle this. Like, I've gained 30 pounds. Like, we got to get away from here. There's too much good food here. I'm a fatty. So we moved out by the mountains, and you know, we have to just basically cut some ties on some of that sometimes. Like, nah, we're out of town. Or, hey, man, you know, we're busy in training camp. I'm sorry, man. We can't go out. And usually they understand that.
I love it. And it's the same way for me. You know, you try to save up money, and it's like everybody comes to town, you end up spending more money. Like, I don't have the money. I didn't save up for this.
Yeah.
You said earlier, I happened to catch it, you said you weren't really on social media. So before I dive too far into that, are there any social media accounts, Twitter accounts, Instagram accounts that you follow that you find that are kind of fun to watch in your free time?
Yeah, you know, I love watching Instagram. You know, I love pictures. I feel like, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words, you know, so they speak. And it's really cool to see all, you know, everybody's lifestyle in the pictures and their life through photos. So it's I really enjoy Instagram and the video. And you know, so that's pretty cool. My Facebook, you know, I just have my personal Facebook account with all my, you know, my friends, MMA junkie people that I'm friends with. But you know, social media for me, I realize it could be an awesome tool for marketing and for making money. I see Misha killing it with that, so I'm trying to get back into it a little bit more. But yeah, she helps me out with that. Lucky for me, I'm very fortunate that I not only have a beautiful, badass girlfriend, but she's a master at doing social media stuff, so it's good to help out.
You kind of actually touched on it a little bit. Does it make it tough to get those fights that you maybe think you want because maybe you're not on there as much? Because now it seems like fighters are going out of their way to always, they go straight to Twitter, they go straight to whatever to start calling out people. Do you find it tough to get the matches, or do you still have that old school relationship where, like you said, Sean calls you up or Joe calls you up, you know, I mean, how does that work for you?
Yeah, you know, I talk to them personally, Sean Shelby, UFC, Dana White, they have my cell phone number. I talk to them personally. I manage myself. You know, I pretty much always have. I mean, I've had help along the way. You know, Dennis Holmes helped me. Yakima, I mean, I've had a lot of little help, but generally, you know, I've haven't really had a manager. Yeah, you know, as far as social media goes, I still have actually, for a bantamweight division, I have one of the biggest followings, partially because my girlfriend's a superstar and she's beautiful and smoking hot and people want to see pictures of me posting her in her bikini. But hey, that's cool with me or whatever, you know. You got the whole beef with Ronda and stuff, and I get dragged into all that. You know, I threw myself in there a few years ago, but you know, it all comes back around. You know, despite me not being on there all the time, I still have people who are assistants who help post on Twitter for me. I'll post to my Instagram or whatever, so I'm still active but inactive, you know what I mean? So I still do that stuff, but kind of from a distance. And, you know, it works out. I think I haven't had too much of a problem of, you know, getting some good fights, I think.
And then just finally to touch on that thing, do you think that's good for the sport or bad for the sport that fighters tend to go first out onto the airways, which shoots it out to everybody to kind of start a beef or start, you know, talking to another fighter? Do you think it's good for the sport?
You know, it's good and bad. You know, people are talking about the sport and it's, you know, raising awareness, you know, it's good. But do I like the direction that it's going with the type of the sport, getting more into the crazy, I don't know, I'm not saying WWE is bad, but, you know, it's an entertainment thing, and I understand fighting is, but fighting, what makes it so cool is it's as real as it gets. That's the whole catch line of the UFC, you know, this is real stuff. And I just don't want to turn into a, you know, a circus show, you know, Conor McGregor selling tickets, whatever. But, you know, I'm more of an old school martial artist, you know, I don't like to talk, you know, a lot. I've done that in the past. It's bit me in the butt. You know, it's not really my style. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, as long as the sport keeps growing, you know, I hope we can find a happy medium.
Nice. And speaking of the hot girlfriend, please don't hit me. you're fighting on the same card with Misha. Is this the first time this happened?
No, we've actually fought. Misha and I has actually fought on the same card before on a little bit smaller show. We fought in Washington State in Cage Quest, and we also fought on Strikeforce together, which is actually a good show. We fought on HDNet, and you know, it was interesting. But like I said, there's positive and negatives. It sucked because I corner her, and I was supposed to be at that time like a co-main event or on the main card, and I had to reroute things and be an early prelim fight just so I could be ready to corner her in the show. I was like, we really wanted to put you on a bigger portion, but so that kind of sucks there. But and the nerves of having to deal with my stress and pride and then hers sucks. But on the positive side, we're both training, we're both dieting, we both don't feel entitled, like, hey, this is my fight, this is my time. You know, it's like, hey, we're both so tired, we can't complain, like, we'll just both go to sleep, like, you know, kind of both do our own thing. But it's nice to be kind of like-minded as far as our dieting, our food, and our training schedule.
Speaking of that household, both you cutting weight, how is that with that, both you cutting weight at the same time?
Well, luckily for her, she doesn't really have to cut weight, she just diets to clean up her diet, so she takes the junk food out. She doesn't really have a lot of weight to lose. She stays pretty close to her walking weight. Misha could actually be a 125 pounder, but so she just kind of cleans up her diet a little bit. She's not really, she eats pretty clean anyway, so I'm more the grumpy cat around there. And when she has a fight or whatever, she's usually really occupied training as well. So, it works out in that aspect. We both kind of are too tired to argue with each other. So it's like we're both like, okay, I'm going to bed. So it's good.
Well, it's got to be a little bit tough. And I wonder, do you think you'll find yourself worrying more about her fight instead of your fight when it comes to fight night?
You know, it's, man, that's a tough question. I'm a worry work for both. But, I'm really confident in her in this matchup and fight. I'm still going to worry about it. But, the way it's going to go is I asked them to have me fight first, so I'll be worried about my fight, I got to get mine over first. And then after my fight, normally you have this huge relief of pressure. I think as soon as I get back, I'm just like, oh, great, I got to do this all over again. So I think it's going to be a double dose of stress. I'm not going to have that initial fight and get a chance to relax and maybe have a beer. But, people say, what's going to be worse? I think it's going to be just equally bad. I'm going to be stressed for mine. Mine's over. I'm going to be stressed for hers. But I'm very confident in her fight against Jessica Eye, although Eye's very tough. I don't feel like Jessica Eye's a very dangerous fight that she's going to hurt Misha and beat her up. If she does beat Misha, it's going to be, a running decision, but I really don't see Misha losing to her.
And one of those questions that I know it's probably a fighter's like, I can't believe this guy asked this question. Just to go back on the last fight, the loss, are there things that you take away from it that you're able to take into this fight? Or are you one of those guys who goes back and really studies, all right, this is what I did wrong? Or was it just, that fight's done and gone, let me focus on the future?
No, absolutely. I mean, everybody, if you've asked most people, they say they learn from their losses, that, failure is the building blocks for success. And that kind of opened up some of the eyes for, my eyes to me, that fight. I realized that I think that I could have won that fight. I realized that I am one of the best in the world and I could be a top five guy and I could beat guys like Asensio and beat guys like Dillashaw, but that exposed some of the holes that I needed, and I realized I can't skate by on the talent set that I have, that I need to work on some other goals. I need to really work on my striking, more so not the skill set, but more so repetitive timing, be in shape. I was dealing with some injuries in that, which I'll probably be taking into this fight. But I realized, after that fight, and that I need to address, I need to address the problems that I'm having. I need to address my striking issues, whether it's conditioning, whether it's punching, whether it's drilling more. I haven't hit focus mitts and trained striking, really probably for 6 or 7 years. Like, unless we put on the gloves and we're fighting. Like, my striking is we're fighting MMA. I'm going to fight you in practice. But I never really focused a lot on actually getting better at striking, getting my timing down, hitting mitts. And I took that into account. And this fight I'm working with Jimmy Gifford, who's an awesome MMA striking coach. And I'm working with him 3 times a week. I'm doing a lot more shadow boxing. So trying to get my shoulders, my body conditioned to be able to throw down a little bit more.
And when you said, probably takes up the injuries, it's just one of those, nagging things. It's just, fighters, they're like, we're always somewhat injured.
Exactly. I have a lot of injuries that I've been dealing with, and I'm just super stubborn, honestly, a little bit afraid to go get surgery on it, because I'm afraid of surgery. I don't want to be out that long, and I really should have. I plan on doing it after the Sun-Sau fight. I kind of ran into some insurance problems and some other stuff, and, I realize that I need to get it taken care of, and in every fight, people have injuries, but, I feel pretty good now, and can't wait to fight Weiland.
Awesome. Just a final couple questions on Weiland. Weiland, what excites you the most about this fight?
you know, fighting Eddie Weiland is going to be a really fun fight because, you know, he's a brawler. He's a scrapper. He's sprawling brawls. You know, he had wrestled, I believe, in high school, maybe even college, so he has a decent, you know, wrestling background. You know, he took Faber down. I think their first round he beat Faber. I think he actually even took him down. So the thing about him is I know Eddie Weiland is a fighter. You know what I mean? There's guys who are skilled and they're fighting the UFC and they're fighters. There's guys who are a fighter and there's guys who are is a fighter at their heart. Nick Diaz is a fighter at heart. I feel like Eddie Weiland is a fighter at his heart. I feel like he'll take a punch and he'll give a punch and he'll get in your face, and that's what I want. I don't think Weiland's gonna, you know, run from me. You know, I hope, Eddie, I hope you're out there. I hope you don't run from me. I hope you stand in my face and you try to KO me, and that's what I want. I think he's gonna bring the fight to me, and that's what I want. I want you to come forward and not back up, and let's fight, man. Let's not run around and play games.
How do you see your skill sets matching up? Where do you think you have the edge?
Obviously, you know, Weiland's got great striking. You know, he's good everywhere, but I think he would say his strength and what he enjoys is striking and moving. And obviously, you know, my game's grappling, you know, wrestling, grappling. I feel like I have the advantage. If you just clearly see black and white, he's a sprawl brawler, moves a lot, good heavy punching, and, you know, I pressure the pace and get guys in scrambles, and, you know, I choke guys, and that's, I think, what's going to be the classic, you know, obviously striker versus wrestler. But, you know, obviously I'm going to be throwing punches back, and I'm going to be trying to knock him out, and, you know, he's going to probably, you know, maybe try to take me down or choke me if I'm in a bad position. But I think overall our game plans, overall, if you had to pick, it's going to be striker versus, you know, grappler wrestler.
And then finally, if there were some keys to the victory that really need to take place to make sure you get your arm raised at the end of the night, what do you think needs to happen?
You know, I just need to come forward, and I need to bring the fight to him. That's the main thing, is you have to dictate the pace of the fight. You know, I have to bring the fight where I want it to be. So the whole point of the fight is I have to make sure that I'm putting the fight in my favor by pushing forward, pushing the pace, and you know, dictating where it goes, whether we're striking, whether we're wrestling. I want to strike on my striking terms. I want to wrestle on my wrestling terms. You know, if I want to grapple, that's going to be the key thing, is using some wrestling to bring the fight where I want to fight. I don't mind striking. I like striking, but it's got to be on my terms when I want to engage and disengage. So the key is just controlling the fight.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Great answer by
Ed. No, that's good. That was great. I thought it was great.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffey sitting with me here at the bar at Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs and Durango. Nice cold frosty beverages in front of us. That was Brian Caraway. Again, a guy that gets hated on sometimes, but overall I've come to really like him. I think he's a pretty good dude. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in July with both of them fighting on the same card. I know that he and Misha are kind of, you know, emotional support for each other. And with both of them fighting on the same night, it's kind of like, you know, Sergio and Anthony Pettis fighting on the same night and things not going so well. So,
And he did kind of allude to that fact that he's kind of a worrywart for him. Who wouldn't be a worrywart knowing that your loved one's out there going to be scrapping? Like, I imagine, yeah, watching Sergio and watching his brother, they get kind of amped up. But let alone, like,
absolutely
somebody that you're in a relationship, wow, you know, I give him props, you know, I mean. Maybe that gets them more amped up. They're like, I'm going to get in there and get in the fight. And he, and, you know, like he said in the interview, he asked specifically to be on an earlier fight so he can get it done with, be over with, so he could be there for. And kudos to them. You know, and heck, the UFC's probably like, great, we can get one room, two fighters. This is awesome. Saving money.
Subtle jab. All right, well, let's talk about it. So the multifaceted, multi-skilled Cold Coffey, not only yes. is he doing his own interviews now, let's talk about what else you're doing this week. I mean, this is the MMA Roadshow, but hey, man, it's partly about our lives a little bit, and you branched out a little bit and did some boxing this week. So you were working as a member of the media to cover the Premier Boxing Champions event. Adrian Broner versus Sean Porter is the main event. I've always said, I like boxing. I enjoy boxing. I'll watch the big fights, of course. And, of course, I appreciate the technique and skill. I'm not the historian or the study on a daily basis of it the way I am with MMA. But Adrian Broner, of course, is a pretty polarizing guy and certainly well aware of what he brings to the table. But you were at both the open workouts, excuse me, and the press conference. Just, I've seen some of the video you shot.
Yeah.
But just give me your thoughts on it. I mean, a completely different experience than covering the UFC.
It's a total different experience. And I do want to say, you know, it was kind of funny that this being the first boxing event I've worked in probably, I think, ever, it was a battle for Ohio. The two headliners are from Ohio. One, I think, is from Cincy. The other guy is from Akron. You know, something along those lines. So I thought that was great. Me being a Ohio State Buckeye and, you know, tried and true, the best university in the world. But
the Ohio
State. You know, just going to say that.
Yeah, let me peel back the curtains a little bit here. On Kenny is so Ohio State, like, focused that the O on his keyboard has the O sticker of Ohio State.
It's a block O sticker.
A block O.
A block O,
excuse
me,
the block O. Of course you have a name for it. It is the block O of Ohio State over the letter O on his keyboard. So if you ever wonder, yeah, he kind of likes Ohio State.
I kind of like them. But, yes, it was unique, and it was a good opportunity to go and see something. And, you know, and again, you know, I know it's not MMA, but it is still fight game. It's still somewhat related. And it was very unique. You know, one of the things that I've taken a liking to see is just how different organizations. That's why I'm excited to go see how Bellator is going to do their thing. You know, seeing how this boxing, and I haven't watched it, but I've been reading about what this Premier Boxing Champions is, and it sounds like it's pretty impressive. You know, just the people that they have to do the commentary and all the other kind of stuff seems very, very impressive.
Big names.
Now, that being said, the open workouts and the press conference were a little disorganized, a little kind of crazy, you know. I mean, one, the open workouts, you know, even though it was for media, but there was also public. There's some shots, you know, where I'm literally felt bad because I want to push this cute teeny little girl that was sitting around the turnbuckle, you know, when Broner steps into the ring while Porter's still there. And I'm like, oh, this is the money shot. I got to get this. But I'm like, oh, I can't be like, hey, little girl, boom, chuck her to the side, which you kind of do when it's meaty guys.
Right.
I mean, that's what you do. You kind of, you know, there's always this thing.
Yeah, jockey for position.
Yeah, how do you jockey this 2-3-year-old girl that's sitting there trying to take pictures of Mayweather because, you know, Mayweather's going to get in the ring. And it was tough. And eventually they kind of got a hold of it and stuff. But it was just unique. But it was just like I was looking. I was like, how is this even working?
Yeah.
One, it was behind the times and, you know, everything was late. And it just made me respect how organizations like the UFC and other ones that are able to make the madness work and somewhat fall. And I will never, ever fault those guys. I love the PR team. I love what those guys are doing. They do amazing work. And, you know, and as much as I like to kid those guys and ever say how, oh, you know, when is this ever going to start? I won't ever say a thing, you know, after seeing some of these things. But it was crazy. You know, like Broner, I had never seen before. But you're right. I mean, he's a character that he could certainly galvanize feelings. You either love him or you hate him.
Yep.
But the guy certainly goes out there and he's certainly talking the game. And, you know, and some of the stuff I saw, I don't know if it's either – I went back and forth in my head whether it's good for boxing or whether it's bad for boxing. You know, I think right now, I think a lot of people are thinking boxing's on the decline and you need to sort of spice it up a little bit. And if that's the case, this gentleman has certainly sort of did it. You know, but at the same time, you're seeing that here's a promotion that's kind of being sort of backed by Mayweather. Both fighters, in a sense, are Mayweather's guys.
Right.
And you got one guy that's clearly – toying around and really going at the other guy, you know, and then Mayweather kind of has to step in and be like, hey, you know, guy, kind of calm down, relax a little bit. And you know, it was kind of interesting to see Mayweather in that role because I've never seen Mayweather in that role. Like, have you ever seen somebody say, oh, Floyd, just relax, Floyd, just, you know, calm down. You know, no, it's always like the Floyd show. And I think this guy's kind of come up seeing that. And then here he is now just regurgitating it back. But he did. It was amazing. Like, if you watch the presser, which I did put on onto the MMA Roadshow site, it's incredible because there gets a point where there's an exchange that happens with Broner and Porter's dad that I'm starting to think like, hey, Jerry Springer's about to pop out the back and, you know, and just get
bizarre.
In between the two.
I was watching it earlier today. It's bizarre.
It's unreal. But I mean, you know, I think it's interesting, and it, you know, and again, what I take away from it is it definitely I appreciate what these guys are doing. I mean, because these guys are still putting so much love and time and effort into their craft, you know, that I respect them for it.
Yeah.
You know, I might not be the biggest boxing fan, and I won't lie. Half the times the guys are up there and start to do stuff, I'm asking one of the other photogs, who's this? Who's this?
You
who's
were that
this?
Guy.
You know,
you were
who's
that guy.
That guy? Who's this
you
guy?
You were that guy that didn't
know. Oh, I was
know
totally anybody. That guy. But, I mean, hey, I have no shame. You know, I would say, hey, yeah, this is my first boxing thing. They might look at me a certain way, whatever, and I mean, but hey,
it is what it is.
It is what it is, you know.
It's you know, it's interesting. It's interesting PBC is trying to do some big things, and obviously they've got boxing all over the place. Now, they're paying for the space. They're paying for the airtime. But, you know, they've got it on NBC. They've got it on Spike. They've got it on CBS. They've got it in all these different places. So it is interesting to see what they're doing. A really interesting thing this weekend, too, that I just found out, I think today or yesterday, that if you buy a ticket, there's actually two shows this weekend. One is Saturday and one is Sunday. And if you buy a ticket, you get that same seat at both shows. So, I mean, you're getting two shows
crazy.
For the price of one, which is pretty cool. One thing you did say that I did want to ask you about is I know that this was your first boxing event. You've covered the MMA media for a while. Obviously, Kevin Ioli gets treated pretty well by the UFC.
Oh,
you know,
he's been
covering the UFC for a long time here in Las Vegas, and gets treated pretty well by the UFC. But what I think some people might not know in the MMA world is in boxing circles, that man is royalty.
He is. And funny enough story, just to kind of, I think you referenced when I was talking about this photographer that who was kind of my. You know, he was my guide, if you will, when I first got there, because I was kind of asking him, you know, how do these sort of roll? You know, what happens? The guy's going to come in here. Is this the main ring where they're going to work out? You know, do they normally run late? Blah, 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 blah. And he's like, yeah, it kind of goes. This is going to be the main one, and everything goes good. But then at some point, the riders usually show up, and then everything just goes and gets all crazy, and they start changing it for the riders. And I'm just like, that's weird. Why would they change it for the riders? You know, I figured this is more visual because I don't remember hearing about any sort of scrums, really, or anything taking place. And at one point, he's like, yeah, there's one of the riders right there, you know. They always change it when he gets there. And I'm thinking, like, huh, who's this? I couldn't really see the turnbuckle was in the way. And I kind of peer around, and sure enough, it was Kevin Ioli. And he's like, oh, yeah, when he comes in, you know, they'll usually change it around or whatever. And I'm thinking in my head, well, I'm like, hey, this could work for my favor. And I was like, well, you know, funny enough, I know that guy. Let me – You say they changed it around to work with his schedule? I'm like, let me go see. So they end up going over there and asking him, I'm like, all right, so hey, what are you going to do? Who are you interviewing? Can I piggyback off you? You know, and it was neat. You know, and he actually, while I was chatting with him, Leonard Ellerbe came over, and actually everybody came over. Watching people come over to him, you could really see that he had been in the boxing field for a while. And it was neat. Like, kudos to him. I think he's a great writer, and it was awesome to see the love that was being shown to him by all these people, and it was great. And
he's been covering the sport for like 30 years, man.
Oh, he comes up to me at one point. He's like, "Oh, you know, this one guy came, and he's got here. Let me tell you his story. I think you should interview him." And he's telling me the story. Oh, gosh, he was a DeMarco, and he starts telling me a story about him. Blah 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 blah. And then this Garcia cat. He's telling me a story about how. Oh, you know, he was living out of trash cans, yada, yada, blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, like, one, I'm like, Kevin, I don't even know who that is, you know? And two, I'm like, I appreciate the story. And I told him, I was like, but I don't know any of these guys. So, like, I could ask that one question, and then I have no follow-up besides, like, generic whatever. It's not like the MMA
you
bubble.
You ate out of trash cans, huh?
So tell me about that trash can.
All right.
What did you look for first? Yeah. You know, it's not like the MMA bubble that we've kind of been living in where I've watched these guys now for years and years, you know. But it was unique. I mean, and it was great to see Kevin get the respect that he deserves. And, yeah, man, he's like a boxing legend. I'm watching boxing legends come over to him saying, hey, Kevin, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
pretty
damn,
wild.
That's impressive. And great job for Kevin. Kevin's been on this big weight loss kick and everything lately. He looks
guy's lost like 100 pounds, man.
Phenomenal. He looks fucking great. Kevin, if you ever listen to this, I'm not sure. You might be busy doing all your boxing stuff. I think great job on what you're fucking doing, man.
Inspiring.
Inspirational.
Inspiring. The dude's done well. Well, I want to say one more thing, and we've got a couple of interviews. I did an interview that I want to play in just a minute, but I want to say one thing. One bit of breaking news, and we are recording this on Thursday night, but one thing that I woke up to this morning actually was an email from the Brazilian Athletic Commission that Honey Jason had tested positive for a diuretic in his fight in Guiana. Obviously, this was along that six-week stretch that the MMA Roadshow had been kind of nutty, but ended up being stranded in an airport with Damon Jackson, Honey Jason's opponent for a while. And if you've been listening to this podcast, you know we got Damon to stop by just because it was an interesting experience. And, of course, his dad was in town. His wife came in town. He had his – he left his three daughters at home, and his wife flew down. His sister was there. I mean, just a hugely important night for Damon Jackson. And then Honey Jason was able to submit him in very impressive fashion, just showed incredible jiu-jitsu. But then test positive. Now, I will say Honey Jason has outright said, listen, I did not take anything. I did not take any time of banned substance. I'm going to fight this. So we'll say it's you know, I'll say alleged at this point. You know, maybe he'll prove that he didn't take anything. And I'm not trying to throw accusations. But I don't know. It just struck me more, I guess, this time. It's not the first pop test I've seen. Obviously, I've covered a lot of them. But that 1 week was pretty wild simply because I did spend so much time around Damon. Watching the guy cut weight in an airport lounge, you know, and then post-fight, you know, happened to running into his wife and just seeing how sad and upset she was and knowing, you know, just it really humanized the whole experience for me anyway. And we talked about it before that, you know, it just made the whole thing more emotional when you see up front and close, you know, what people putting on the line, what it costs, you know, what it does to relationships and to families and to all those things. And then to have Honey Jason test positive. Now, again, I'll say alleged. Maybe it'll turn out that it didn't happen. But it really does change the context of PED use and diuretic use and whatever and all these things that are essentially cheating. I mean, when you've been that close, whether you meant to or not, to watching the guy on the other side of it and knowing that this guy may have cheated, I don't know. It really – I was laying in bed, actually. The first thing I do in the morning, I'm terrible. I pick up my phone and I – What emails did I miss? What text did I miss?
Sure.
You know, that's the first thing I do before I do anything else. And that was the first thing I saw. And I don't know. It just struck me in a little bit different fashion than it normally does. It's weird when you see it up close and you know what the person on the other side of the equation kind of lost.
And I agree. And it's tough to not get attached to these guys, you know, because you can't help but feel for them. But now there's a question that I pose to you is that since the commission was set up there by the Nevada Commission – or at least by Mark Ratner, kind of modeling after that. Now, when he says he's going to contest it, I mean, do they not initially, when they first get the first positive, do they normally take a second sample, right?
Yeah,
do
they go back test and test the B sample as well.
Test a second one? I mean, do we know, do they test another sample? Has it not been tested? I mean, I thought it was like by protocol, if the one first test positive, they automatically test the second.
Yeah, normally you automatically test the B sample just to make sure, because otherwise you're kind of like, again, you need to rule out any possibilities that maybe there was an error in the A sample. So normally the B sample is tested as well.
So if they're coming out and saying, like, he tested positive, more than likely we could probably assume A and B have tested positive, and that as much as he says, hey, I want to fight this and have my day in court, it's kind of not really anything you can do to change it. And that more than likely they already overturned the results,
right?
Correct?
No contest, which will be interesting to see, because Damon Jackson, 0-2 in the UFC, took the first one on short notice, fought up a weight class because he was taking it on short notice. This was a full camp, but was probably due to be cut. You go 0-2 in the UFC, you get cut. Now, does he get a reprieve? I don't know. I would think so. You know,
I would hope so. I mean, I know that there's no clear sort of procedure, I guess, when this sort of things, and maybe that's one of the things that hopefully eventually sort of works out, where you can almost guarantee, oh, well, this guy tests positive. Oh, well, they're going to overturn. They're going to give this guy maybe his one win money. I mean, I know that stuff hasn't hashed out, and I'm sure it's on a clear basis. Now, Honey won a bonus.
Yeah, $50,000.
So what happens with that?
$50,000 just disappears for some reason, which I think kind of sucks. I'll be honest with you. Like, I would love to see him. I'm not saying you got to give it to Damon. I mean, you can't say Damon had the performance of the night. He lost. You know what I mean? So I don't think that's necessarily fair. Although, it would send a hell of a strong message to be like, yeah, you had an impressive performance, but you cheated, so we're giving your opponent the money. But there were some other great fights on the night, too, where it's like, man, couldn't you go reissue that money somewhere? Like, I mean, it's already budgeted. I mean, the UFC's already got it budgeted. We're spending $200,000 a show for bonus money. So, yeah. I mean, certainly – I'm sure they don't hate getting $50,000 back.
No.
But,
right.
I mean, this is not money they were expecting to have. I would kind of like to see him revisit that and distribute the money somewhere else.
Or what if maybe future events, because this was given back, we get to give out an extra bonus.
Oh, that'd be cool.
A future date.
Like, we're not going to go back in time because it's hard to put ourselves back in that mindset. But guess what? Tonight we've got three performance of the night bonuses because we got that extra 50 from Goyana.
I think the fans would respect it. You know, rather than just say, oh, hey, you just kept the money, rather than give it to somebody, at least reallocate it in a way that I think fighters are still benefiting from it. Because at this point, one guy did wrong, but all the rest of the fighters are paying for it.
Yeah.
It should be just the one guy.
I like that. I'd like to see something done. All right, well, I want to play an interview with you that for you, I should say, that I did today with Ricky Lundell. Ricky Lindell, I think, is one of the most underrated coaches in the game today. Super intelligent, super big student of the game. Just really a smart dude and really a passionate dude about MMA and about grappling especially. But Ricky, we've crossed paths a couple times, and really it's funny because Ricky saw the MMA Roadshow in its infancy before it was even born, as I started traveling the world with the equipment to make sure that basically as we started talking about what we were going to do, I bought the equipment that we were going to use. And I wanted to travel with it. I wanted to make sure I could fit it in my case. I wanted to make sure that I didn't get, you know, I didn't have issues with customs and all these things. You know, just make sure that everything was going to work and that I could go somewhere else. And I mean, I blew a couple of soundboards, you know, testing it out.
Well, not so much the soundboards, but the power adapters.
The power adapters, yeah. I mean, I mean,
if people don't know that, when you go to some countries, you should check to see if your electronics work. Look at the numbers on your power adapters.
Yes, it needs to say 140 to 220 or whatever it is.
Yeah, 120 to 240.
Yeah, whatever that is.
220, whatever.
This did not. And those were things that before we launched this thing live, because the last thing I wanted to do was launch this thing live and say, hey, we're going. And then like, oh, but we can't do it this week because this happened. We can't. So we did some dry runs and some tests and stuff. But anyway, Ricky one night. Ricky and Angelo Reyes, this was the night of the Frank Mir and Bigfoot Silva fight, or the week of, I should say. They came into the room, and we had a couple cold beers, and I had the equipment out because I was testing it, and Ricky was like, man, what a fantastic idea. Man, you should go for it. That's great. And I was like, damn, because I love talking with him so much. I was like, I wish we were ready to produce this live right now.
Sure.
Because I love talking MMA with this guy. And so with us being in Las Vegas this week, I said, let's go by the practice room. I set in on his high school wrestling practice.
And this is not just any practice room, and this is not just any high school. You got to set up as well where you're at.
It is Bishop Gorman High School, which is the premier school in the Las Vegas area. Obviously, this was the former school of Lorenzo Fertitta, former school of Dana White as well. And it is a nice school.
It's amazing.
The football field is incredible.
It rivals small universities. Actually, it probably rivals pretty good-sized universities as well. I was amazed when I went by and saw it. And, I mean, the weight room, the facilities, top-notch. So you figure anybody that's going to be coaching there, training there, doing anything is going to be top-notch. And one of the things I love about Ricky before – I'm sorry to jump in.
No, not at all.
You see him, and he's always behind the scenes. Like, even when he's there in fight camps and you'll see him around, he's not one to go out and, like, talk and say, oh, yes, we're doing this. He sits behind the scenes, and he just works fucking magic. I love it. I respect him so much just for that because he's such a badass. But he's not a braggart about it by any means.
This guy, he graduated college when he was 18.
Wow.
He has
– I had no idea.
World championship grappling medals. Like, I mean, as an athlete himself, he was a world champion, gold medalist, has done extensive research. You know, he kind of shared this with me. Guess it was off record. Sorry, Ricky. But, you know.
Trying to make it an off-record-ish comment.
Yeah. Sorry, bro. You knew I was recording a podcast. But, you know, talked about, like, the amount of research that they do on their opponents and how he builds data around opponents and how they prepare.
Well, that makes sense.
You know?
I think a lot of places do that. I mean, I think any place that's a top-notch place.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not like the Patriots, you know, and like recording their on-field stuff.
Right.
But, I mean,
not cheating about it, but the amount of energy and effort. Like, he was explaining it to me today. And I guess it's not really saying that, hey, listen, he has a system that he's not going to talk about. I'm not going to reveal the details of his system.
Yeah, sure.
But listening to the details of his system and the way that he puts in research, it was just like, wow. And it's funny that you mentioned the Patriots because we talked about the Patriots. He's like, not cheating, but how they achieve their greatness, and so much of it is through systems that they have in place.
Sure.
And the way they execute and the way they do things, and just an impressive guy. So anyway, if you don't know who Ricky Lindell is, if you've ever seen the blue shirt with the G on it, that's Bishop Gorman, and he basically looks like he's a high school kid.
Like he just got out of high school last year, and I would not. Go up to him and say that to him.
Well, we joked about it a little bit, so he was all right. So I had a chance to talk to Rick Lindell. I think this is going to be the first of many appearances for Ricky. Kept it brief because this was in between practices. I caught him after his high school wrestling practice and before Frank Mir was doing his practice. The Countdown crew was actually there, so they were kind of waiting on me to finish doing my interview. So I was like, let's keep this short so that, you know, these guys that are filming for the upcoming Countdown show for the Todd Duffy fight.
I enjoyed the pictures that you were putting on the MMA Roadshow Instagram account, which you all should follow. I thought it was nice. You were showing a little bit of the facilities, and I liked the one where you're showing the girl beasting out on the dudes.
Oh,
there.
Man, this girl. I don't know what her name was. I think they said it was Allison. I may have heard that right, but this girl was just schooling dudes, dude.
I love
just
it.
Throwing out. And there's no women's wrestling division in Nevada, so she wrestles dudes.
And
she finished fourth in state.
And I think, if anything else, that's the awareness that needs to happen. Like, you know, I think the women are probably more than fine wrestling dudes, because when they destroy the dudes, it's, like, that much better. But, I mean, hey, if it brings awareness and, like, hey, let the women have – if the girls want to have a league, make a fucking division. Let them go at it, because I'm sure there's more than they think, because – they just, most of the girls, like, I don't want to go in there and wrestle a guy.
Yeah.
But if they're like, hey, I can go in there and wrestle girls, I guarantee girls will be lining up to join wrestling.
Be cool, man. It'd be cool. I really, as weird as it sounds, I hope this girl fights someday. Like, I want to see
I
her
love
fight.
It.
Like, I walked in the door. It was funny because practice was just starting. Like, literally just starting. They'd only been going for, like, 10 minutes. But I was just watching this girl, like, walk around, the way she was carrying herself. And, like, she was the first to do everything. She was like, I was like, Ricky. That chick's a badass, isn't she? And he was like, dude, and that's when he told me the whole story. Like, she wrestles guys. She finished fourth in state. I'm like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, you could just
fourth
tell.
Fourth in state
just
is no joke.
Yeah, from a girl wrestling
that's
this
badass.
Guy. Pretty amazing. So anyway, we get ourselves.
I'm looking forward to this,
Dad. I know, right? It was incredible, man. So as we get another round of beverages here at Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs in Durango, let's sit back and relax and listen to Ricky Lundell, who is always complimentary of my radio voice, but I think he's got an even better radio voice. This dude, on top of everything else, this dude has like an incredible – he's got the dulcet tones.
What a fucking stud.
All right, we're going to get us a frosty beverage. Hopefully you enjoy it. We're here in the Bishop Gorman Wrestling Room. Ricky Lundell is here with me. We've just finished a three-hour-long practice with a bunch of high school studs. Man, first off, let me ask you, how did you end up at Bishop Gorman? I mean, we always see the blue shirt. The first time I saw you, I thought you were just a Bishop Gorman student. I think you're so young looking, but how did you end up here?
Yeah, I hear that a lot. Actually, there's been a lot of guys who have thought that I must be part of maybe. I don't know, the Fertitta's family or Dana White's family or something, just following fighters to the cage. I'm some 16-year-old kid walking around. But I'm actually, you know, a head coach to a lot of these UFC fighters. It just, I can't grow a mustache, and I don't have that ability yet in my life. I ended up here at Bishop Gorman. I love wrestling. I learned how to wrestle under Cale Sanderson at Iowa State University. And, you know, the years I was there, we were there 2007, 2008. We were the national champion runner-ups. We also we won the Big Ten championship. So I wanted to stay involved in wrestling and make sure that I keep working with the youth, keep giving back. And it was actually the alma mater of Dana White, Lorenzo Fertitta, Frank Fertitta. That's what Bishop Gorman is, and it was kind of built around them. So they said, hey, you know, you should look into this program. And helping this one out, and I took it full heartedly and said, yeah, I want to get involved. And when I came on board, there were 7 kids in this program, which is unbelievable. That's not very many at all. And since that time, there's only a few kids that haven't moved on. I've been here 2.5 years, which is a short amount of time, but in that amount of time, John, we've had several nationally ranked kids. We've sent kids to college now, which is pretty amazing for our program, and we actually have a woman who's ranked nationally. So all in all,
a stud of a woman, I might say.
A stud of a woman, and then through the vine. I mean, we've had the likes of the greatest fighters in the world training out of here. I mean, we've had in this room, we've had John Jones, Carlos Condit, Travis Brown, Frank Mir. I mean, and the list goes on and on from there. I mean, guys like Phil Davis coming in, or people from all over the world, when they come in to train with me, I bring them to Bishop Gorman. And it would surprise a lot of people to believe, but they train with a lot of these high school kids because they're at that level. They're just incredible.
That's amazing. You know, it's funny. I took a picture of your board that's sitting over there earlier just because I was amazed. I mean, this looks like a week's worth of activities. I mean, this is basically a practice all lined up there. And, I shared that on my Instagram. By the way, I should share a little bit. I'm on Instagram because of Ricky Lundell. He's
yes.
the one that basically forced me to. And I should say, you saw the podcast in its infancy before it was even born. We were traveling with the equipment, trying to play around with it a little bit. So I'm glad that we could come full circle and do this thing for real.
Oh, I'm so excited that you rocked this, John, because you've really picked this thing up and you've made big waves with this podcast. And anybody who's listening, I mean, you travel the world, you're with the best of the best all the time, and I feel like you give the most cutting edge information out there. So your listeners are very lucky to be with you.
I appreciate that, brother. I appreciate that. So your board is incredible. Now you're telling me, I got to sit here and watch this whole thing. I mean, no joke, the warm up, I was like, that's a full workout for a lot of people, and they were just beginning the grind. And you said, this is the same type of program that you put your professionals through. And I think the thing that you said that was really cool was building athleticism, that everything is built around increasing, whether it be a high school kid or professional fighters, increasing their athleticism. So talk to me about that philosophy.
Yeah, John, there's a huge problem inside the sport with people already believing they're at the pinnacle. They're already at the peak of their athleticism. And the truth is that no matter your level, you can improve. You can get better. And it's not hard to see that. If you just watch the Olympics, you can see such incredible athletes in all different fields, and you could say, wow, I could probably improve a little bit in this area or that area, right? So my whole system is built around no matter your level, if you're at the baseline, the beginning, which I'll tell you right now, when I first walked in here, I had 7 kids. Several of them could not even hold a handstand for 15 seconds. Now they're nationally ranked in a wrestling program, going off to college. So I know that the program builds athletes. It builds them up. And at the same time, the way that it's set up, it's built so that if you can do one part of it, the level only increases from there. And then so you take somebody who's just as athletic as John Jones or a Frank Mir or something like that, that warm-up pushes them like nothing else I've ever seen. I've taken guys to the best strength and conditioning guys in the world. That warm-up pushes them harder than that, and it's our warm-up, John. That's the crazy part. It's our warm-up, but it is so ridiculously hard. You got people. It basically looks like a bunch of ninjas flying around
it
in
does.
This room. It's hard
like
to imagine.
It's like a half gymnastics routine, half wrestling. It's kind of a hybrid.
It is. It's like a hybrid, and that's what gives the ability to explode with your body at certain given points. To have the ability to do a suplex, you have to have incredible spinal flexibility. You can't just lay back with somebody and do a suplex. That's how you knock yourself out. You have to be able to bend backwards and lay somebody on the mat. If you need to go forwards, you have to be able to lift your leg up at a certain angle, like a Ronda Rousey. She's done that for years, so her hamstring flexibility, her quad flexibility, it's all there. So when she lifts her leg in the air, somebody goes flying through the air. How do you develop that? Every single day, it's through consistency. You have to push and push and push in those areas, and if you miss a day, you're in big trouble. One of our big statements we always say is, if it's important, you do it every day. And John, if you want to be the best in the world, that board is one of the big things that we're always pushing, because we want these guys to become better athletically, not just in martial arts. You know, the technique, don't worry, we'll handle the technique,
right?
But I need you to be a freak athlete. And you look at the best guys in the UFC, you look at a Mighty Mouse, that guy's an athlete. He is an athlete. You look at a John Jones, he is an athlete.
Right.
You look at a Cain Velasquez, he is an athlete. And you look at these guys that own the divisions, the GSPs. These guys, everybody looks at them and they're like, wow, he's such an athlete. Well, yeah. And then you add martial arts to that, and martial arts, leverage holds. That's what we're really using. Angles to create leverage. You add more strength, you add more power to leverage, you can pick up bigger things. That's the whole key. So what do you got to do? Failed athleticism.
I tweeted earlier, too, while I was watching it. You're a mad scientist, man. It's like, it's awesome, because I think people, hopefully they're listening to this, see that, you know, not only do you have an incredible martial arts background between wrestling, grappling, I think probably a lot of people even in the sport don't understand where you've been, what you've done, what you've accomplished as an athlete in your own right, but you're also putting a lot of really like mental side approach to things and doing it. And then the other thing is you're super hands-on, and I'm just curious, I mean, is that the way you work with everybody? Because watching you today, I've been to a lot of practices, I've been to a lot of gyms, and I've seen a lot of coaches, and not that there's anything wrong, everybody's got their own style, but I think you're probably one of the most hands-on guys I've ever seen.
Yeah, I've always been very hands-on with every single person that I coach, from Joe Lozon to Frank Mir, it doesn't matter who it is. Even though they're larger, if we're working the technique and we're working motion, I can work it with them. And it's all about staying in structure and good position and pushing your athlete and making sure that they get a good feel of what's actually coming for them. Because a lot of the time, you're going through the motions and maybe you miss something one day, you miss another thing, and maybe you don't get a good feel because I'm just sticking you with some crappy partner because I didn't have another big guy.
True.
That's a problem, John. You have to give them the right feel. And when you're going to face somebody who's really, really good, like Bigfoot Silva, for instance. I sparred with Frank for the Bigfoot Silva fight.
Wow.
And that would surprise people. Like,
yeah.
I
normally think you got to get a guy whose body type and movement matches.
Yeah, I have to move with him, and I have to match more what his opponent's going to do. And that's a skill you develop over time, like anything else. And you start to mimic others and make sure that your fighter gets better at feeling that feel. You know, Carlos Condit came out here. We work for Thiago Alves. I mimic Thiago Alves. Now, Carlos Condit, he's a lot larger than me. Same kind of thing, but very hands-on from start to finish. We made sure he was moving from start to finish.
But see, I could see you mimicking a Thiago Alves. I mean, how tall, what's your size? You walk around?
I'm 5'9".
That's what I thought.
5'9", about 158 pounds.
So, I mean, you could... Thiago's not a huge welterweight, so I could see you mimicking him a little bit. But a Bigfoot Silva, I would be worried that Frank would get a bad feel. Not the case.
Not the case at all. I mean, his results played out in the fight. But, yeah, a lot of the time you would look and you would say, hey, well, he's so much bigger, he's this or that. But when you're using proper technique, when you're using proper angles, you can give them the look they need. Now, if I'm gonna bring in the biggest, baddest sparring partner – and he doesn't move correctly, he may not be good for my guy anyway. I need him to move correctly. I need him to give him the proper angles. And one thing I do know is the times that I work with my fighters, they don't get injured because I know what way we have to go. Sometimes you just throw somebody in there, and before you know it, you have an injury. Good example of this, and it's sad that it worked out this way, but John Jones, I was supposed to go out there for his camp. I suddenly get a call. I'm not going out there. What happens? He's put with a bigger guy, Alistair Overeem, ends up hurting his knee in wrestling class. They have no wrestling coach there that day, and he ends up getting injured. And that was a brutal, brutal mishap. Millions of dollars lost for everybody on the line. Super sad that it went out that way. And that happens all the time all over our sport, you know. And as long as you know that you're moving correctly with your athlete, the odds are he's not going to get injured.
Yeah. You've been kind of a I won't say like a role coach, you know, for a lot of fighters, but you're starting to take on a bigger role now, head coaching. Obviously, Frank Mir, we've seen the results that you and Angela Reyes had with Frank Mir already. Anna Houlton is here. I know you're working with her as well. How is this growing? How are you deciding? How much can you take on? I mean, you've got a job here with Bishop Gorman as well. So how is this transition working for you?
You know, I love it. And one of the reasons I love it is I feel like knowing the entire game and putting it together, that's a skill set that I carry on very well. It's something that I've always worked to develop the skills in that area to manage people and get them involved. I'm not always going to have the answers in every area, but I find the guys that do, and I get them on my team, and I make sure that we're giving my guy the correct answer. And that's the real key to Lundell MMA is I'm not trying to pretend that I have every answer. You know, I don't know every single thing. But I'll tell you what, I will find the guy who does, and I will bring him into the camp, and I will make sure my guys are always taken care of. And I when I look at it, I don't have the ego in that spot. I know where I stand. I know my strengths. I know my weaknesses. And I want to get the right guys for my guy.
That's awesome. Are you actively seeking out more people to work with? Are you trying to take on this head coaching role with more fighters?
I am. You know, as guys approach me, and as long as they have, you know, a will to win, you know, that's a huge thing. They actually want to win, and they're willing to put in the work. B, they have the right personality. You know, the coaching and working with an individual, just because you have a big name doesn't necessarily mean we're going to fit together very well, especially because taking on a head coaching role, my life, it consumes that fighter's life. I have to spend a lot of time on them, and it's really hard to give it your all if you don't like the person that you're going to be working with. And at Lundell MMA, I mean, I'm a very wholesome kind of individual. I don't swear. I don't go out and party. And I grew up that way. You know, that was my parenting and how it kind of came up through my life. So even inside a camp, you heard my music today. It's like, I mean, people would be surprised by it. It's very like hip-hoppy, fun. It's not what you'd hear in a regular gym. But the music isn't where the work's being done, you know, and you don't have to get crazy and swear and go party to be a tough guy. We're looking for athletes that can think logically and they can get in there and they can think tactically and win fights. And that's the goal. That's how you become a champion in this sport.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I'm just sitting here blowing you up, but I had fun watching what I saw today. But I thought your motivation was fantastic. It's hilarious. You know, you're trying to get people to do extra reps. You're like, hey, these are extra. You don't have to do these. If you want to sit it out, feel free, man. But if you're a champion, I mean, these are for the champions here, you know, and everybody's like, damn
That's
it.
Right. John,
all right.
I try to consistently tell everybody, being a champion is not a mandatory thing. It's not mandatory. So if you want to do it, John, we can do it. But if you don't want to do it, no big deal. Don't make me force you into being awesome. You know? Don't make me force you into being the man and living it's an like awesome life.
He said if you don't want to be big and strong and walking around looking all good, you don't have to.
You don't have to. I'm happy to take a step back and just let you be who you want to be. I don't want to get in the way of you being average. I want to be here for you if you want to be a champion. But otherwise, don't make me step in the way.
This is fantastic. Well, listen, I'm not going to keep you for a long time. I know you got to get into practice. Frank Mears over there stretching out, getting loose. He's got a big monster of a training partner there that plays offensive line at UNLV.
He does. That's Zach Singer, and he was actually another one of my Gorman kids who came up through the system.
Is that
so
right?
He is. He is a beast, and now he's playing college ball. So it's cool to see how the world works. Now he's here at UNLV. Stayed with Tony Sanchez, who was the head of the program here at Gorman. Moved on over to UNLV. Singer followed in there, and now he trains in mixed martial arts with the biggest guys in the sport. I mean, he's been a training partner to Travis Brown, Frank Mir, obviously. I mean, Singer was Travis Brown's training partner when we were going after Barnett. So you have a 19-year-old kid, but this isn't your ordinary 19-year-old.
No.
I mean, this is a kid who reps like 600 pounds, no problem, in everything he does. Full back bends, full neck arches. I mean, this is the real deal. And for the listeners out there that are here, and until you see him, it's hard to imagine how monstrous this young man is.
That's incredible. Well, give us a little tease on Frank Mir. Obviously, he's got a big fight coming up. Todd Duffy, big, strong cat, you know, very powerful. Man, we've seen the resurgence of Frank Mir. We saw it in the last time out. Is that continuing? What are we going to see from Frank?
Frank's making huge gains. I mean, watching his body improve, he was at a place before where honestly, over the course of years, you know, he had been beaten up so much that there's a lot of scar tissue built up. His body wasn't moving the right way. I mean, we weren't able to functionally train. We took that year off, and we had a lot of rehab work to do. So we took that time. We started rehabbing. We started getting everything in motion. He moves like he's young. I mean, he really does. And I can't wait for everybody to actually see what I'm seeing on a daily basis. When he's going and scrapping with people, he looks fast. I mean, fast like a welterweight. Very fast. His movement, his wrestling's better. His footwork's better. His striking's better. I mean, his jiu-jitsu doesn't suck either,
right?
So that's a good area for him. So watching what he's capable of doing, watching him go out there and put down a Bigfoot Silva, who we all know is a very tough opponent. I mean, we all know that Frank Mir still has what it takes to be inside the octagon. And as his head coach, I'm just excited to be a part of the ride.
That's awesome, man. Well, I will let you guys get to work. I know the mad scientist has got to get back to the lab here. Man, I would encourage anybody, if you're a fighter that's thought about coming out here, I'm just saying, if you know somebody that's looking for a place to train, it sounds weird to say I'm going to Bishop Gorman High School.
It does.
But
it, does.
It seems like the great place to do it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming down and having me on your show, because I love what you do and I love what you're doing. I mean, big things are going your way, and it's exciting to be on your show today.
That's awesome, man. Follow Ricky Lindell on Instagram, because you're just full of motivational stuff, man. If you're having a down day, just see your feed and all of a sudden you're hyped up.
Yeah, I try to just push out there whatever is going on in my life and what's been helping my fighters, and you know, maybe it'll benefit somebody in the long run. So please follow me. My Instagram and Twitter is at Ricky Lundell, RickyLundell. So please hit me up.
Perfect, man. It's been a pleasure, dude. We'll do this again, because I love talking MMA with you, man.
Thanks so much.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee sitting with me. Buffalo Wild Wings, Warm Springs, and Durango here in Las Vegas. This is where we'd like to call home when we're in Sin City and not on the road, which we've been on the road a lot lately, but we're going to enjoy a little home time. So that was Ricky Lindell. filmed that earlier this afternoon. Or filmed it. Well, I taped it. Whatever. You know what I mean. The Frosty Beverages are enjoying themselves at this point. Let's talk about this weekend. You and I are going to be sitting at home. You're not. You're going on the road. Half the MMA road show is going on the road. You're going tomorrow morning, as we talked about earlier. You're going to Bellator 138. Kimbo Slice, Ken Shamrock in the main event. It's a freak show. There's no other way around it. But it's a freak show that I'll definitely be watching, and there's some other decent fights on the card. This was late notice, so I know you haven't had a lot of time to think about it. I mean, we didn't decide to send you this thing till last night, so I guess just what are your thoughts? I mean, literally, you're going to be getting on the plane, and as we record this right now, your flight leaves in 9 hours.
Is it even that long?
So
I think it's more like 8 hours.
About 8 hours, and we still got to edit the podcast and get it posted online, but we'll get it done. But
well, you know,
I guess what are your thoughts?
Main thing I took away from it is one is Kimbo Slice. That I've gone from watching this guy being a YouTube sensation, knocking people out in the back. In a backyard of some random house or wherever, to a guy that has had multiple attempts to try to be in the UFC and whatnot and do his things. And I know he's put his effort in to do it. I mean, obviously, if he's made it to the level to where Bellator, I think they're not just expecting a freak show. I think they're expecting that it's going to be a fight. And Shamrock's, you know, was a legend at one point. Maybe he still is, you know, whatever. But he's still a name I remember and I know of. And I'm kind of looking forward to see these two, you know, in a sense, clash of styles, where a guy that came up from the internet and the YouTube with another guy that has been in it since the beginning, you know, butting heads. And I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And I just hope it is not over in 30 seconds or I will be very pissed.
Steven Morocco has been out there all week long. So if you're looking for coverage of Bellator 138, check MMA Junkie. We got a lot of stuff out there. We've got some video. We've got some photos. We've got some written material. Steven put in some work out there.
MMA Junkie is everywhere, folks.
We're everywhere. And just everywhere. To prove that point, not only did we got you covered in St. Louis, but we got you covered in Germany as well. So Matt Erickson flew over to Berlin for UFC Fight Night 69. Of course, the women's strawweight title is on the line. Joanna Jędrzejczyk in the main event. Of course, anytime I mention her, the first thing that comes to mind is that video we did back in Dallas in March where we had everybody.
How do you say her name?
Yeah.
Jędrzejczyk. She's like, come on, you try. You try this.
She's great, man. I mean, not only is her fighting style fun to watch. I mean, she's a Muay Thai wrecking machine, and that's fun to watch. But she's got a little attitude and a little swagger, and it's fun to watch, man. I like her. I didn't pick her in that fight. I wanted to, but I thought Carlos Barza's wrestling was going to be too much. But, gosh, man, she's a lot of fun. And that video was a lot of fun. That was the first week you were working for us, right?
I think so. I think that was probably the first one. And, yeah, we got lucky because, I mean, she's a character. You're right. I mean, here she is. She's coming out, and, you know, she's like this little badass. But we had no idea.
Right.
But then we had no idea also, too, about this personality of hers.
Yeah.
You know, and I think she's wonderful, and I think she's great for the sport, and I'm so looking forward to it. And she's fighting such a tough character in Penne. I mean, like, she's no joke either.
Yeah.
And I mean, but you're right. I think a lot of us picked Carla, but now after watching Joanna on that one, it's hard to pick against her.
Yeah, man.
You know, and I mean, I know Penne was a champ, but I mean, as much as I like her, it's tough after that last performance to pick anybody but Joanna.
It is tough. So we've got Matt Erickson out there. We've also got our European correspondents, so I'm looking forward. I'm going to see them in Scotland in a month. But Abby and Sandu have been contributors to our site for the past few months and really done a great job, man. I think they're kind of making a name for themselves, working their tail off over there in Europe and becoming you know, partners with MMA Junkie. And I think they've been doing some great work over there and helping Matt Erickson. Just real quick, it's kind of funny. As much as I've traveled the world, and I've seen a lot of the world, I've never been to Germany, believe it or not. Steven Morocco loves going to Germany. He always used to ask, hey, can I take that one? He didn't want to take this one because he's actually going to Scotland as well, and I think that was part of it. He just didn't want to do two European trips a month apart. But I couldn't go because I've got friends in town, actually, right now. I've got friends from England who were here this week, and so I didn't want to fly to Europe and leave my European friends here on vacation by themselves. But you've been to Germany while working for the UFC.
Yep.
I guess any insight you can share on Berlin for our listeners that haven't been there? Is it a cool spot? What are we missing out?
It is a cool spot. It has some beautiful buildings and a lot of history there. And one of the I guess just a couple quick points, you know, is one of the first things I noticed when we were coming into Berlin is you start seeing this cobblestone or sort of brick pavement that kind of bobs and weaves its way through the street. And I remember we were just like, what the heck is that, you know? And it turns out that is in remembrance to the Berlin Wall. It follows the path of the Berlin Wall. And you literally, whether you're on the main road or whatever, this goes through. And, you know, and at one point in the night, you know, we're walking to try to go get something to eat, trying to find a place to have a drink. And you'll see that there's that brick walk, just a couple bricks, side-by-side bricks. No more than a foot wide, but it just kind of runs through the city. And it's amazing. And it's kind of a somber thing, you know, depending on what your mind state when you run into it, because you realize the differences and how far they've come since then, you know. But they still have a lot of stark reminders, like the Checkpoint Charlie that I was telling you about a little bit. There's a point where, you know, after the fall of Berlin, you know, when the Russians were covering one side and the USA was covering the other side, there's this area where their tanks were on either side, and it was kind of uneasy sort of standoff. You know, they're kind of like, both, yeah, hey, we're on the same side, we're allies, but hey, you know, you're not going to get any more of this land, and we're not going to take any more of that one, you know, and it's just an uneasy thing. And there's just scars from the war still in the city that you see, and it's beautiful and it's sad all at the same time. You take it all in, and there's a Holocaust memorial there that is a very somber but beautiful sort of thing as well. And I mean, but there's food there that, I mean, it's amazing, it's wonderful. There was a side street, you know, and this is kind of a funny thing. I'm walking down a side street and I see some bank and I see a girl on a picture and I'm like, holy cow, is that Michaeline? And it was a girl I went to high school, I went to college with.
What?
That was a theater major. She took some like photos or whatever, part of the things that every actress will do, and like take pictures, and it's repurposed as some bank like document, you know, bank sign. I took a poster. I was like, dude, is this you? And she's like, holy shit, yeah, that's me. And I just like, I love Berlin. How weird is that?
That is crazy.
Like, here's the place where there's a Holocaust memorial. Here's the Berlin Wall going through. And then there's my old college buddy on a wall in a bank.
That's bizarre.
But it was, you know, it was beautiful. It was wonderful. The food was great. Of course, the beers are great. And if I ever had a chance to go back to Garrett again, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Instead, we sent you to St. Louis.
You got to go there. I mean, Germany is amazing. The people were so nice. And food was just wonderful.
That's awesome. Yeah. Instead, we sit in St. Louis, though. Instead, that's.
But hey, I love me some barbecue
there
and grilling.
There you go. They got it. Well, so we want to do something a little different now, kind of to honor a little bit and some respect of our guys over there in Europe.
Yep.
Sandu, Chamotkar Sandu, just goes by his last name, Sandu. It's actually
much
Chamotkar. Yeah. Yeah. The Chamotkar. Way he says is Chamotkar. But yeah, he just has everybody call him Sandu, and you can follow him at Sandu MMA if you haven't seen some of his work already. But he did a fantastic sit-down interview with Alexander Gustafsson, talking about kind of what's happened up to this point. You know, the Anthony Johnson loss, which was huge, and now getting a title fight in light of everything that's been going on. And Alex talks about the fact that you know, he was so down after that loss, man. He actually thought about giving up the sport. And wow. And just being done with fighting. I think, you know, kind of battling a little bit of depression or whatever. So, anyway, it's a great sit-down interview. The video will be on MMAJunkie.com as well. But if you don't have a chance to listen to it, I thought, hey, let's include this audio in the podcast. And
it's like
and,
a little bit of the road.
Yeah, we're not on the road, but we got some of our buddies on the road. And good guys. Really, really need to know both these guys. It's funny, those two guys and me, we started splitting apartments on the road, you know, Airbnb, an apartment or a house or something like that, just so you have a little bit of personal interaction, man. You're not stuck going to your hotel room and not having anybody around, especially when you're traveling away from home. So gotten to know those guys pretty well over the past few months and even years. And they're doing some fantastic work for MMA Junkie, which is really exciting to see. So we thought, hey, let's let you hear this interview. Let's play this interview. Get caught up with Alex and see Sandu at work. So as we get ready to close things up here, we'll tell you a little bit about what's going on. We'll have another round of Frosty Beverages, and we'll let you sit back and listen to this interview. And hopefully you've seen this work before. If you haven't, if it's something new, I hope you like it. And hope you like the update on Alexander Gustafsson.
So Alex, when you talk about an up and down roller coaster year so far, 2015, that's exactly what you've had. You know, let's go back to Stockholm first of all in January. Obviously, a low moment in your career. What was it like handling the loss to Anthony Johnson in Stockholm in front of your home crowd there?
Well, it's been a pretty up and down this year, 2015. But I was like in Stockholm, my latest fight. It was a really bad blow for me, for my career, my personal life. It was a tough hit to take. That fight I couldn't lose. I actually lost. So it was pretty bad. But now I'm here, and you know, I got my family, I got my friends, my teammates. So I got the real support. So now I'm back, and I'm feeling great, better than ever, actually.
Is it one of those things that you think, you know, sometimes people say you can turn a negative into a positive, you know? Did you find out maybe who your real friends were in that moment? Or did you find out, you know, who was really there for you to come and support you, you know, at a low moment like that?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. That's what life is, to be an official person. Like, you know, when everybody knows you, but you know nobody. That's when you have your real friends and your family and stuff like that. That's the most important thing in life. I mean, like, you know when who the real people are when it's going really bad, when it's going, you know, downhill. Then you know how it's who really there for you. But you know, they pushed some rock bottoms, and they kept me going. They kept me in the gym training. I suffer for a lot of my motivation was gone, basically. So that was the toughest part, to keep on training with the normal motivation. But you know, my motivation is on top now, and I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great, actually. So
I read recently that you said you were close to quitting MMA completely. Is that true? Were you?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah. That's true. It was really bad. I mean, really bad. You know, I lost fights before, but this fight was the fight I couldn't lose. You know, I could lose any fight in my career, but I was supposed to win this fight, but I didn't. So, yeah, I was thinking about that to quit sport, quit my career. I was really depressed after the fight. So.
Did you even think what would you do even if you quit MMA? What would you do as a career?
Well, I don't have any. I have no idea. I didn't have any plans. Nothing. I just wanted to like escape from everything. Yes, escape from Stockholm. Escape from everything. From the media. Everything. I just wanted to like from the gym. I didn't want to see the gym. So it was tough. And I didn't know. It wasn't like I had a plan or. It's not like I'm having a good base to, you know, to come back to and. I don't know, work or anything like that. I don't have those possibilities. So I didn't have any plan at all. I couldn't stand the thought of MMA.
Well, it was an interesting chain of events that got you here to a title shot. Let's go through it step by step. After Stockholm, Anthony Johnson was first supposed to fight John Jones. Then John Jones gets in trouble with the hit and run with the police, gets stripped of the championship. First of all, when you heard that had happened to John Jones, what was your initial reaction?
I was shocked, and I had to read it a couple of times to understand it was actually happened, that they really didn't took his belt and he wasn't the champion anymore. He wasn't that guy anymore. So I was a little bit shocked, and then after a while I started feeling sorry for him. You know, I don't wish anybody something like that. I don't wish anybody to get stripped from something that you really been working hard for. So you know, I had some tough times, but I can't even imagine how tough he must have been right now in his position. So yeah.
Did you reach out to him, or do you have any means to reach out to him on Twitter, on DM, or anything at all? Or?
No, you know, I've just been asking questions from media and what my thoughts are, basically, and I'm just, you know, telling my opinion.
Okay. Well, because of what happened to John Jones, Anthony Johnson had to fight Daniel Cormier for the light heavyweight championship. Before the fight, did you think Daniel Cormier would beat Anthony Johnson, or did you think being in the cage with Johnson just a few months earlier, that would be the guy to go on and win?
Well, yeah, you know, I want to fight Anthony again. We'll probably fight again. I want to show everybody my potential. You know, I want to show everybody that, you know, I have the potential to beat him. But when it comes to their fight, you know, I had a feeling that DC would win that fight because he's another type of fighter. He's more of a grind, and I always knew in back in my head that Anthony's a great fighter, and I'll never take that away from him. I'll never take that away that he beat me. He did that fair and square. So, but I knew that he doesn't have that tank. He doesn't have that conditioning. You know, he has so much mass, body mass on his body, so explode. Everything he throws is hard. Mm. So I just knew that, you know, he won't be able to keep fighting for that long. And I know DC, that's his thing. You know, he can continue for 10 rounds.
Right.
You know, he has condition like, you know, he just keeps going. So I had a feeling that DC would win the fight. I thought he would win on decision. But it was a great fight. You know, both went in there and they gave everything, so.
What have you made of Daniel Cormier, just generally, in the light heavyweight division, coming down from heavyweight? Is he exactly what you expected, or better than what you expected?
No, you know, I see him as a you know, one of the top guys. He's the champion now, of course. He's the champion. So he's the best guy out there right now. And that's how I see him. I see him as the best guy out there right now. You know, he's been proven that. He's been beating tough guys, and he done it in short notice, too, and... He just has such a good wrestling base and such a good, you know, comes from such a good, you know, wrestling pedigree, and he's been doing sports all his life. So, you know, he's that guy that works very hard for all he wants.
Tell me the moment when you got the phone call. I've heard a few stories about how emotional you were when you got the phone call and you found out that you were going to get the next title shot. Tell me what happened there and what you were feeling.
Well, the truth is I was on my way to practice, to training, and I just felt I wasn't really in that good mood because I was late and, you know, it's such a traffic that time.
Right.
So I was just running with my back on me and running to the practice, and then I had my managers outside. And they're like, hey, Alex, you have to come. I'm like, no, I'm late to practice. I can't come. I don't have time. I went over there and it just gave me the good news. And after that, I just kept smiling. I've been smiling since then. You know, my motivation's on top. I just feel great. I feel great to be back in training, and everything is so much fun. You know, I'm just happier guy right now. You know, everything is fun. Training is fun. You know, doing everything that comes to MMA is fun right now. So I'm just enjoying my time.
How do you prepare for Daniel Cormier?
I would train hard, as we always do. We always train hard, and we're gonna get some guys in that can simulate DC very good, and I'll pretty much work on my takedown defense and be fast and use my precision. That's my pedigree, and that's what I have to come back to. You know, I have to go back to my basics, and. And I talked to Andreas, to my coach, and that's all we're going to do. Back to basics, work hard, and turn every stone we can in this camp. And I'm not going to leave anything outside the cage. Win or loss, I'm going to give everything I have in that fight.
You brought up Andreas. Yeah. He came on under a little bit of fire in the Stockholm card. I don't know. I think it was him that shouted the instructions for the front kick in English. That's what Anthony Johnson said he picked up on. Have you talked about that in camp in terms of how you're going to communicate during a fight, whether it will be in English or whether it will be in Swedish?
No, we haven't discussed that. I don't even like. I can't blame anyone, and I can't like. I can't. You know, it's going to be on English, you know, that's how we talk, me and my trainer. We can't start talking Russian or anything else. You know, we have to stick to what we can do in the heat when you know, everyone throws punches, you know, in the middle of the war. You need to hear what you need to know what you're listening at, and that's what we're going to keep doing. And of course, we can always improve things, and that's what we're going to do, you know. If something, you know, it makes you, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you harder. That's basically what it's done to me.
Were you surprised with some of the reaction from the fans and also media that you got the title shot, perhaps over some people thought Ryan Bader was more deserving? Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I was surprised in the beginning. I was a little bit shocked. I didn't see that coming at all. And now the UFC wants me to face DC, and I just see this as a second chance. I just see this as an opportunity for me, and I won't even go into why it happened or why I should fight him or anything like that. I'm just enjoying my type and I just enjoying my time, and I just know that I got a second chance and I would do the best of it and show everybody that I can be the best guy in the world.
I mean, I don't blame you. I don't think anyone can blame you because it's not your decision. The UFC called you for the title. You're not going to say no to a title shot at the end of the day, are you?
No, of course not. No, exactly.
So, facing Daniel Cormier, if you beat Daniel Cormier, do you consider yourself the legitimate light heavyweight champion of the world? Or, in your opinion, do you still need to beat John Jones?
Well, officially, I am the best guy in the world if I beat DC, but I won't be that, though, sad to say. You know, everybody knows it, that, the real guy is out there waiting for his shot to come back. And, you know, I'll be more than glad to welcome him back.
All right, well, that was our boy Sandu in action over there. Abby was recording as well, so that is the dynamic duo over there putting in work alongside Matt Erickson in Berlin, Germany, so hopefully you enjoyed that. That's going to pretty much do it for us. You've got work to do. You've got to edit this thing real quick.
And try to find an hour or two sleep in there somewhere.
You're getting on a flight to St. Louis in just a few hours from now. And, definitely we'll take two more.
This is like brand new.
Oh, is that still full? I will take two more anyway.
That's how we do it.
But you've got to edit this thing, get it online, and then you're jumping on a flight to St. Louis. Well, you'll be alongside Stephen Morocco, the magnificent one over there in St. Louis. Y'all be doing things up. Next week, the UFC is going to be in Florida. Not sure if you saw the stories or not. They're having some visa issues. I don't know how many fighters are going to be in Florida and how many aren't.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be an interesting story to continue to follow. Fortunately, I am not going to that event. I was going to do that event when it was in Brazil. When they moved it from Brazil to Florida, I backed out. Matt Erickson's going to handle that. I figured, hey, another week at home wouldn't kill me. So I will be spending another week at home. You will be celebrating a birthday next week.
Yes, and it starts this weekend after I get back from Bellator. Do a little grilling and barbecue, if you will, to start my birth week celebration.
So you said if people could find your house in Las Vegas,
if
they're
you
invited.
Can find my house in Las Vegas, you're more than welcome to join me. Good luck with that.
Good luck with all that. Awesome. Well, so we'll still do another show next week. Obviously, we just won't be on the road doing it because we'll be at home, which we deserve that time. Damn it! And then 4th of July week, and then International Fight Week, and that's going to be. Boy. I can't wait. We're going to have to do something fun for that one because almost the entire Junkie crew is in town. We're going to be having the Junkie Gathering, so we'll have to take full advantage of that. But that's just a little bit. And then it's Scotland after that, and then the whole crazy road show
then
starts up again.
And it's back on the road. So maybe we'll get some bonus episodes next week with I guess that's fight week. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Oh, International
now.
Fight Week?
I'm thinking like fight week.
We can do some damn near daily content.
I'm so excited for that.
A lot of big stuff, man. You've got Invicta. You've got UFC 189. You've got the Tough Finale. You got the expo that's going on. You got all the stuff. It's going to be a busy week. It's going to be a fun week. So anyway, that's then. Obviously, you can see we start thinking ahead. We get too ahead of ourselves, man.
I get excited. But hey, let's do the fine details. Follow us on Instagram at the MMA Roadshow. We're also on Twitter, the MMA Roadshow. We have a Facebook page, the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan. I want you to go on there and like it, share it, post shit on it, do whatever. Get on there and get some people to go. And I want you to tweet Buffalo Wild Wings and tell those wonderful, fine folks that they should sponsor us. Do whatever. Go on to MMA Junkie. Say what you like. Go to USA Today Sports. Tell them why they are the best sports in town. And, yeah, that's it. That's my
plugs. I like
plugs.
It. My man is shameless. Subscribe on iTunes. Review us on iTunes.
Oh, and iTunes. See, I knew I forgot.
Do that, man. I respect it. I like your hustle, dog. You're not afraid to just ask for the support.
I'm just going
to
ask for it.
Hey, we're having fun doing it, but getting a little support wouldn't hurt either.
A little support wouldn't help, you know. Like, hey, if I'm gonna get 2 hours of sleep tonight, let's do it for a reason. But we love what we're doing. And we love that we can do it. So
awesome. Well, another episode is in the books. This one from Las Vegas, from Buffalo Wild Wings, of course, where we set up shop and we're down on the road. But thank you to everybody first and foremost for all that. With everything that Kenny just said, let me just say thank you to everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week.